Hello, welcome to Entertainment Weekly. I'm volunteer reader Diane Salisbury on Sun Sounds of Arizona, and every week I read from Entertainment Weekly's website, which is EW.com. You know, when we were gearing up for the Oscars, there were so many Oscar articles about just the movies and who was going to win, but I also collected up a couple lists that made me think of Oscar winners, and there's also one that compares Oscar features, Oscar movies going on right now, with some older movies, classic movies, and so I thought I would bring some lists for this episode. It is a very list-heavy episode, and I hope it's interesting for you too. The first article is Oscar Double Feature, 10 Classic Movies to Pair with 2025's Best Picture Nominees. This is by Maureen Lee Lanker. And of course, it was written right before the Oscars happened. So in the writing, it sounds like that. The 97th Annual Academy Awards celebrates the best of 2024's year in film. From the Cinderella story gone awry that is Anora, to the gravity-defying tale of Wicked, there's something for everyone. If you've watched all 10 of this year's Best Picture nominees, or even if you haven't, we have some ideas about what to watch next to craft the perfect and possibly unhinged double feature. Here are 10 classic film pairings. Match your favorite nominee with a throwback to create a winning double feature, or why not envelop yourself in them all? Surely there's an award for that. If you liked Anora, watch Irma LaDouche from 1963. With its fairy tale framework of sex worker lifted out of her circumstances into untold wealth via romance, Anora has rightfully earned comparisons to Pretty Woman. But the film shares a dark sense of humor with Billy Wilder's Irma LaDouche, in which Jack Lemmon's disgraced cop, Nestor, disguises himself as wealthy Englishman Lord X to woo prostitute Irma LaDouche, played by Shirley MacLaine. Both Anora and Irma embody the trope of the hooker with a heart of gold, with mixed results, and Nestor's dual identity scheme mostly results in a comedy of errors that shares some absurdist DNA with Sean Baker's latest film. If you liked The Brutalist, watch The Fountainhead from 1949. While The Brutalist is an original screenplay, it shares strong parallels with The Fountainhead, Hollywood's adaptation of Ayn Rand's novel. Both Howard Roark, played by Gary Cooper, and Laszlo Toth, played by Adrian Brody, share a caustic individualism and an obsessive devotion to their work as architects. Roark and Toth find themselves trapped in situations involving building projects for wealthy megalomaniacs and the women they love. And each man uses his creations to send a powerful message to the world. If you liked A Complete Unknown, watch Don't Look Back from 1967. Bob Dylan is and always will be an enigma. A Complete Unknown understands that and asks us not so much to understand the great artist as to watch how one singer-songwriter has the capacity to alter the world around him. Picking up where James Mangold's biopic leaves off, D.A. Pennebaker's documentary chronicles Dylan's 1965 concert tour through England, which he embarked upon after going electric at the Newport Folk Festival that same year. Many of his same contradictions and contrarian views are on display in the doc, as well as a sense that we're tracking an artist in the process of changing culture forever. If you liked Conclave, watch I Confess from 1953. Faith, doubt, guilt, misdeeds, sins of the flesh. All of these are called into question and examined in Conclave and I Confess. While Conclave follows the machinations and behind-the-scenes drama of papal conclave, Alfred Hitchcock's I Confess tracks a single priest, Father Logan, played by Montgomery Clift, who hears a murder confession protected by the sanctity of the confessional and risks going down for the crime in defense of his religious vows. For both Conclave's Father Lawrence, played by Ralph Fiennes, and Father Logan, it's a test of their faith and whether they price their vows above the public good. If you liked Dune Part 2, watch Spartacus from 1960. If you need something equally epic to match the sheer scale of Dune Part 2, and Stanley Kubrick's Spartacus fits the bill, you need something equally epic to match the sheer scale of Dune Part 2, and Stanley Kubrick's Spartacus fits the bill. For starters, the messianic allegory of Dune aligns well with Spartacus's tale of ancient Rome and the title character's status as a savior of his people. Both Paul Atreides, played by Timothy Chalamet, and Spartacus, played by Kirk Douglas, emerge as leaders, Paul of the Fremen and Spartacus of his fellow fugitive Roman slaves. They share a spectacular ability to command loyalty and love, fighting duels with evil adversaries and putting their lives on the line for a cause greater than themselves. If you liked Emilia Perez, watch Victor Victoria from 1982. A musical all about gender identity, a logline that applies to both Netflix's Emilia Perez and Blake Edwards's Victor Victoria. While Emilia Perez is a musical about a trans woman who goes from cartel leader to reformed philanthropist, Victor Victoria situates itself firmly in the world of drag. Julie Andrews stars as the titular Victoria, who passes herself off as the male Victor to land a job at a nightclub. Hijinks ensue when Victoria gets involved with gangster King Marchand, played by James Garner, and her identity strains their relationship. Both musicals are an unabashed testament to the power of love and honoring your true self. If you liked I'm Still Here, watch Missing from 1982. The Brazilian film I'm Still Here tells the true story of political dissident Rubens Paiva, played by Celton Mello, who is abducted and murdered under the Brazilian military dictatorship of the 1960s and 70s, and his wife Eunice, played by Fernanda Torres, who refuses to stop looking for him. Similarly, Costa Gavras's Missing follows the search for a man missing in the aftermath of another South American coup, the 1973 military overthrow that installed Pinochet as dictator in Chile. Based on a true story, the film follows the father, Ed, played by Jack Lemmon, and wife, Beth, played by Sissy Spacek, of a missing American journalist, Charlie, as they search for answers. The duo eventually uncover the U.S. State Department's involvement in the coup and knowledge of Charlie's death, just as Eunice does for her husband. If you liked Nickel Boys, watch The Defiant Ones from 1958. Based on Colson Whitehead's 2019 novel, The Nickel Boys, this experimental film deposits the audience into the point of view of its two lead characters, Elwood, played by Ethan Hirse, and Turner, played by Brandon Wilson, inmates at a segregated reform school. Stanley Kramer's The Defiant Ones also follows two incarcerated individuals, Noah Cullen, played by Sidney Poitier, a black man, and John Joker Jackson, played by Tony Curtis, a white man, who must learn to set their mutual hatred aside when they escape from a chain gang. Both films interrogate systemic racism and prison abuse, though The Defiant Ones paints Poitier as the noble savior of the white man. The Defiant Ones and Poitier are so integral to the world in which Nickel Boys is set that clips of it, including its stirring opening sequence, are included in documentary-esque montages within Rammel Ross's film. If you like The Substance, watch Whatever Happened to Baby Jane from 1962. The Substance picks up the grand guignol horror of Whatever Happened to Baby Jane and says, Hold My Beer. Both films are grotesque examinations of the weight of ambition and the lengths women will go to remain young and relevant in a culture that rejects them at the sign of their first wrinkle. Just as The Substance has reinvigorated Demi Moore's career, so too did Baby Jane for Bette Davis and Joan Crawford, once two of the biggest actresses in classic Hollywood. Their violent sibling rivalry and Baby Jane's unhinged commitment to the vaudeville act that made her famous mirror the toxic bond between Moore's Elizabeth and her nubile double, Sue, played by Margaret Qualley. All this time, they could have been friends. And our last double feature, if you liked Wicked, watch The Wizard of Oz from 1939. Of all the titles on this list, this is the biggest no-brainer. Without The Wizard of Oz, there would be no Wicked. The films both become richer, no matter the order in which you watch them. If you honor Wicked's status as a prequel, you can see Cynthia Erivo and Ariana Grande defy gravity before Judy Garland goes over the rainbow. Or watch Margaret Hamilton terrorize Dorothy before getting the backstory behind her wickedness. Either way, you'll agree, there's no place like Oz. That was an Oscar double feature article, 10 classic movies to pair with 2025's Best Picture nominees, and it was by Maureen Lee Lenker. Speaking of Demi Moore, here are the 15 best Demi Moore movies and TV shows ranked from St. Elmo's Fire to The Substance. This is by Katie Reif. In her Best Actress acceptance speech at the 82nd Golden Globes, Demi Moore confessed that she thought her work wouldn't be recognized on the award circuit. 30 years ago, she said, I had a producer tell me I was a popcorn actress. At that time, I made that mean that this wasn't something I was allowed to have, that I could do movies that were successful, that made a lot of money, but that I couldn't be acknowledged. Now, she's up for her first ever Academy Award. Looking at the arc of Moore's career, there are indeed some popcorn hits. Ghost made $505 million worldwide, and that's in 1990 money. But there are also more modest successes, some big swings, and a few flops that would have curtailed other actors. Once the highest-paid actress in Hollywood, Moore headlined a series of daring star vehicles in the mid-90s, all of which underperformed at the box office. The subsequent downswing in her bankability made her consider quitting acting entirely. That turned around recently when she landed juicy roles in Feud, Capote vs. the Swans, and The Substance. Moore's star power has never waned, shining on screens big and small for decades. Here are Entertainment Weekly's picks for the best Demi Moore movies and TV shows to date, from her Brat Pack beginnings to her award-winning comeback. Number 15 is The Joneses from 2009. After her 90s peak, Moore's career slowed down and shifted from studio blockbusters to independent films. A highlight of this period is The Joneses, which featured David Duchovny as her quote-unquote husband and Amber Heard and Ben Hollingsworth as her children. It's not just a fake family, but a fully designed, packaged, and curated marketing apparatus in the guise of a family. Suffice it to say that this satirical dramedy has only gotten more relevant in the age of influencers. Moore deftly balances ruthlessness and vulnerability as a suburban mom with more than just your usual ulterior motives. We can watch The Joneses on Peacock. One Crazy Summer from 1986. After breaking out as a member of the infamous Brat Pack, Moore was the love interest du jour in 80s Hollywood rom-coms. One Crazy Summer takes a quirky, heightened approach to the genre, reuniting John Cusack with Better Off Dead director Savage Steve Holland for a surreal take on coming-of-age movies. Moore is magnetic in breezy dream girl mode as an aspiring rock and roll singer at the center of a vintage Save the Rec Center 80s movie plot. The wrinkle is, it's her own grandparents' house that's under threat by villainous yuppies. We can watch One Crazy Summer on Amazon Prime Video. Moral Thoughts was in 1991. This underseen neo-noir was a passion project for Moore, who wanted a more challenging role in the wake of Ghost. The actress put in serious effort to get the movie finished after the original director was fired and replaced by Alan Rudolph. Moore's then-husband, Bruce Willis, plays against type as the abusive layabout husband of hairdresser Joyce, played by Glenn Headley. In flashbacks, we hear the story of his murder, only it's nestled inside an interrogation over another murder. Rocking a New Jersey accent as Joyce's friend Cynthia, Moore gives a shifty performance that's key to the success of this twisty, nonlinear mystery. We can watch Mortal Thoughts on Amazon Prime Video to rent. Now and Then from 1995. Although it wasn't appreciated by critics upon its release, the slumber party favorite Now and Then has since been reappraised. Moore, Melanie Griffith, and Rosie O'Donnell star as childhood friends who reunite as adults to support their fourth bestie, played by Rita Wilson, as she prepares for the birth of her first child. Warm and full of bittersweet life lessons, it's a great showcase for both the grown-up cast and their teenage counterparts. Moore is quirky and a little bit edgy as the cool one of the group, whose all-black wardrobe could either be a fashion statement or a sign of clinical depression. We can watch Now and Then on Amazon Prime Video to rent. Deconstructing Harry from 1997. Moore may be a star, but she can stand out in the big ensemble pieces, too. Case in point, Woody Allen's comic Wild Strawberries riff in which Allen plays a novelist. Moore is one of many actors playing characters from his novels, characters he claims come from his imagination but conspicuously resemble people in his real life. Though her screen time is relatively brief, Moore stands out for her comic contributions as an overzealous recent convert to Judaism. We can watch Deconstructing Harry on Peacock. Feud, Capote vs. the Swans, 2024. Moore does some of her most deliciously bitchy work in the second season of Ryan Murphy's anthology series. Tom Hollander stars as Truman Capote, who manages to scandalize the entire Manhattan social scene by writing a viciously gossipy novel about them. Moore plays Ann Woodward, a former radio star Capote all but accused of murder in his story La Côte Basque, 1965. Her character is a social pariah, so her screen time is somewhat limited, but her intensity sears the screen whenever she appears. Just be careful. That bouffant is flammable. We can watch Feud, Capote vs. the Swans on Hulu. A Few Good Men is from 1992. A Few Good Men was then playwright, future Oscar winner Aaron Sorkin's first produced screenplay, and his voice was obvious from the jump. Jack Nicholson delivers the film's most famous moment, "You can't handle the truth!" But Moore holds her own against both Nicholson and Tom Cruise as Lieutenant Commander Joanne Galloway. Cruise's boss and lead JAG attorney investigating the murder of a Marine. Her performance is determined and intelligent, but leaves room for the character's insecurities, giving the film a human side amid all that thrilling dialogue. We can watch A Few Good Men on Amazon Prime Video to rent. If These Walls Could Talk from 1996. Moore shepherded this all-star HBO effort throwing her support behind directors Cher and Nancy Savoca from Dogfight and Household Saints for an anthology film about three women, each from a different decade, and their experiences with abortion. Moore is earnest and vulnerable in the 1950s segment, pulling the audience's emotional levers as a recent widow who decides to end an unexpected pregnancy to save her late husband's reputation. Sissy Spacek and Anne Heche headlined the next two chapters, set in the 70s and 90s, respectively. We can watch If These Walls Could Talk on Max. Number 7 on the list is G.I. Jane from 1997. In her 2019 memoir, Inside Out, Moore called Ridley Scott's G.I. Jane her proudest professional achievement. Popular discourse at the time revolved around the actress, then one of Hollywood's preeminent sex symbols, shaving her head for the part. But she truly gave the role her all, both mentally and physically. Think crawling through the mud and doing push-ups in ice-cold water to portray the first fictional woman to join the Navy SEALs. Moore's empowering, committed performance earned praise from critics, a nice turnaround after the previous year's striptease fiasco. Indecent Proposal was in 1993. Of the two buzzy erotic thrillers Moore headlined in the early 90s, the other being Disclosure, Indecent Proposal is the one with more staying power. Directed by Fatal Attraction's Adrian Lynn, the film stars Moore and Woody Harrelson as a financially strapped married couple whose relationship is tested when a charming billionaire offers them $1 million to borrow the wife for one night. Come on, who would turn down $1 million to sleep with Robert Redford? Moore's chemistry with both men is electric, combined with her individual star power. It's enough to light up the Vegas Strip. We can watch Indecent Proposal on Paramount Plus. St. Elmo's Fire is from 1985. St. Elmo's Fire was a breakout role not only for Moore, but also for her co-stars Rob Lowe, Andrew McCarthy, Ali Sheedy, Emilio Estevez, and Judd Nelson, charter members of the unofficial Rising Star Collective dubbed the Brat Pack. Moore's character, a bank employee fresh out of college who lives a life of excess in all of its forms, epitomizes the group's young and wild reputation. There's still a good girl inside of this party animal, however, and that's what makes her so interesting. We can watch St. Elmo's Fire on Amazon Prime Video to rent. Margin Call is from 2011. This underseen 2011 drama has been memory-holed despite its Oscar-nominated script. Set at a Wall Street investment bank on the verge of collapse during the 2008 financial crisis, it plays with the white-knuckle intensity of a thriller. Moore is the lone woman in a boys' club of celebrated actors, including Paul Bettany, Jeremy Irons, Zachary Quinto, Stanley Tucci, and Kevin Spacey. Swimming with sharks was nothing new to Moore by this point. She's razor-sharp and piercingly intelligent in her role as a risk management executive who serves as a scapegoat for the failing firm. We can watch Margin Call on Amazon Prime Video. We're up to our last three now, and number 3 is About Last Night, 1986. About Last Night is based on a play by celebrated writer David Mamet. Moore stars as Debbie Sullivan, a young woman working at a Chicago advertising firm who's navigating her first serious relationship with Danny, played by Rob Lowe, a fellow yuppie she met at a softball game. Critics, who were often dismissive of Lowe, Moore, and various other Brat Packers, went crazy for them in this movie. Roger Ebert wrote that it gives them the best acting opportunities either one has ever had, and they make the most of them. We can watch About Last Night on Amazon Prime Video to rent. Number 2 is Ghost from 1990. Ghost wasn't just a hit, it was a phenomenon. Moore admitted to Hot Ones that she didn't know whether this supernatural romance, directed by, of all people, Jerry Zucker from Airplane and the Naked Gun, was going to be something extraordinary or an absolute disaster. She needn't have worried. Her chemistry with Patrick Swayze was hot enough to set pop culture and the box office ablaze. Moore is the quiet force that holds the movie together, open-hearted and committed. An Oscar-winning Whoopi Goldberg appears in a comedic role that shouldn't click with the romance, but somehow does. And, of course, this movie redefined Unchained Melody forever. We can watch Ghost on Paramount Plus. And the number one ranked movie for Demi Moore, Entertainment Weekly says, is The Substance from 2024. Moore went to some deep places for her role as Elizabeth Sparkle in Coralie Farge's outrageous body horror hit, The Substance. The arc of the character, an aging star being pushed out of the industry, has parallels to Moore's own experience. She wrestles her demons with ferocious intensity in a performance that's as emotionally potent as it was physically challenging to shoot. Moore sometimes spent up to 6 hours in makeup, including full body prosthetics for later scenes in which Elizabeth has become grotesquely distorted, her younger other half, played by Margaret Qualley, having refused to respect the balance. In the end, it was all worth it. The Substance, an unlikely Oscar powerhouse, became the most celebrated movie of Moore's career. We can watch The Substance on Mubi. Those are the 15 best Demi Moore movies and TV shows ranked from St. Elmo's Fire to The Substance, and it was by Katie Reif. This is a good time to take a quick break to say that you are listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona. This is Entertainment Weekly, and I'm reading from their website, EW.com. We heard about some rom-coms with Demi Moore there. Here's Kate Hudson on her panned rom-coms evolving into cult classics. The critic has changed. This is by Jessica Wang. How to create romantic comedies that endure in 10-plus years? Break up with concerns over how critics will receive the movie, according to rom-com queen Kate Hudson. The stars How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, Bride Wars, and Something Borrowed, among others, are now considered enduring cult classics, but their initial reception was far from a love fest. The above titles sit below 45% among Rotten Tomatoes critic reviews, and Roger Ebert had this to say about How to Lose a Guy, considered iconic today in the rom-com pantheon. Matthew McConaughey and Kate Hudson star. I neglected to mention that, maybe because I was trying to place them in this review's version of the Witness Protection Program. If I were taken off the movie beat and assigned to cover the interior design of bowling alleys, I would have some idea of how they must have felt as they made this film. To what do we owe that shift? I think the critic has changed, Hudson tells Entertainment Weekly during a call about her upcoming comedy series Running Point. I think in the movie world, critics who are looking at things with a certain microscope might sometimes not be looking at it as what people need. The critic has changed, meaning the whole world is a critic now. When you're making a movie to feel a certain way, I call it a spectrum. Who are you making them for? Are you making it for the critic? Are you making it for the people? You try to make the best movie possible, telling the story that you're trying to tell. If you're trying to think about it as who you're trying to please, you're probably going to miss. If I was set out to make Bride Wars or Something Borrowed to be some critically acclaimed Oscar campaign-worthy film, continues Hudson, it would be a very different movie. And she adds, I also think people don't realize how hard it is to get a movie like that made and enjoyed. The Golden Globe winner recently lamented on The View how difficult it is to get male stars on board for rom-coms, a genre that is, frankly, often underestimated. As for whether those comments were reflective of challenges she's personally faced to develop projects within the genre, Hudson says, "Developing projects is always challenging. Not to be super political about it, but it is so hard to get anything even made, let alone something really good made. Regardless of genre, you could have the best idea, and for some reason, it's just not what people are looking for at that moment." She adds, "There are so many pieces to making a great rom-com, but I think the writing is sometimes where there's maybe a lack of focus." Fellow rom-com queen Julia Roberts has cited the lack of robust scripts as the reason behind her extended hiatus from the genre. It sounds like Hudson agrees with that sentiment. "Well, I would never disagree with anything Julia Roberts says. Let's start with that," she quips. "It starts with a great story. If you're not grounding these stories and they're not well-crafted, they're just not going to stand the test of time. Anybody who's ever been in one has that generation after generation connectivity where people actually go back and it still resonates with them. It's because the writing was really good. I'd love to pat myself on the back, but it's really the writing." Next up, Hudson makes her leading TV debut on the sports comedy Running Point, which premiered February 27th on Netflix. From Mindy Kaling, Elaine Coe, Ike Barinholtz, this series is ripe with robust comedic storytelling. It follows Hudson's Isla Gordon, who finds herself suddenly appointed president of the family business, ownership of the fictional Los Angeles Waves, a storied basketball team not unlike the Lakers. After a drug scandal forces her older brother, played by Justin Theroux, into rehab. Long overlooked by her brothers, which also include Drew Traver and Scott MacArthur, and late father, the ambitious and sports-savvy Isla must prove she's right for the job. "It was a completely new experience," says Hudson, who has already forayed into TV with appearances on Truth Be Told and Glee, among others, though never in this capacity. "I'd never been on a show where you do so much in one day. You would shoot a scene from two completely different episodes. I was like, this is a whole new world. But we had such an amazing team of people, and oh my God, we laughed so much." Perhaps folks will even see some of Hudson's leading ladies of rom-coms past, like the determined Andy Anderson in Isla. She's very high-strung, really feels like she has a lot to prove constantly, and hopes for validation from her family, teases Hudson of Isla. "It was really fun to play all of those things." That was Kate Hudson on her panned rom-coms evolving into cult classics, The Critic Has Changed. And it was by Jessica Wang. I have one other list for us, and this is a fun one. The 15 best happy movies on Netflix that will inspire a smile. It's by Andrew Walsh and Alana Gordon. And this was a list that was already established, but they just updated it last week, so that's why I'm bringing it back around. To paraphrase Nicole Kidman's now iconic ad for AMC Theaters, audiences watch movies to laugh, to cry, to care. But sometimes they put on a movie just to feel good. Whether it's to keep a euphoric buzz going after a perfect day or for a much-needed boost after a hard week, a happy movie can wrap us in a warm, comforting embrace. The films on this list range from enlightening documentaries like My Octopus Teacher from 2020, to seasonal favorites like Klaus from 2019. We selected each one for its ability to inspire bliss, whether from a well-told joke to lovers finding each other or the joy of family and self-discovery. This is Entertainment Weekly's list of the 15 best happy movies on Netflix. The first one is 13 Going on 30 from 2004. Jennifer Garner launches a full-scale charm offensive in 13 Going on 30, a fantasy romantic comedy about Jenna Rink, a 13-year-old who wishes to be grown up after a disastrous birthday party. A cross between Big and The Devil Wears Prada, the film follows Jenna from her childhood home to her New York City luxury apartment and dream job at a magazine. As the teen in a 30-year-old's body attempts to understand what has happened to her in the last 17 years, she must confront whether growing up was everything she had hoped for. Garner filmed the movie while on hiatus from her TV show, Alias, and her joyful physicality and unabashed childlike enthusiasm couldn't have been more of a departure from her ass-kicking work as Sydney Bristow. One of the purest and most joyful rom-coms from the early aughts, 13 Going on 30 represents some of the best the genre has to offer and is a delight to watch regardless of your age. 50 First Dates from 2004. 6 years after Adam Sandler and Drew Barrymore teamed up for The Wedding Singer, the two connected on screen for a second time, playing opposite each other in this daffy romantic comedy. Following a commitment-phobic veterinarian played by Sandler who falls in love with an artist suffering from short-term amnesia played by Barrymore, 50 First Dates hones in on and heightens the game of finding the woman you can't stop thinking about and dealing with the reality that she'll never remember meeting you. Set on the island of Oahu, a location so consistently beautiful that it alone negates the idea of time passing, this premise-driven comedy finds emotional resonance amidst all the silly gags. Barrymore and Sandler have just as much chemistry as they did in their first film together, leading to what Entertainment Weekly's critic describes as an agreeably deranged romance with a Geeks in Paradise Hawaiian setting. The Adam Project from 2022. Fighter pilot Adam Reed, played by Ryan Reynolds, travels back in time from the year 2050 to save his wife Laura, played by Zoe Saldana, but misses his mark and crash lands in 2022. He stumbles upon his 12-year-old self, played by Walker Scobell, as he mourns his father Lewis, played by Mark Ruffalo, and struggles with his relationship with his mother, Ellie, played by Jennifer Garner. As the two Adams are hunted by sinister forces from the future, the older Adam must embrace the younger Adam he has tried so hard to forget. Beyond the notable 13 Going on 30 reunion between Ruffalo and Garner, Entertainment Weekly's critic says the film delivers an all-you-need-is-love message with a Spielbergian sense of wonder. Always Be My Maybe from 2019. Sasha, played by Ali Wong, and Marcus, played by Randall Park, were best friends turned high school sweethearts who, after a post-coital fight, lost contact for 16 years. When Sasha makes a triumphant return to San Francisco as a big-time chef, she and Marcus, who is not doing quite as well, find themselves nursing old grudges and long dormant feelings. Entertainment Weekly praises the stars' effortless chemistry, writing, "The bond between them is one of the many elements that make the film feel authentic, sweet, and wildly funny." Barbie is from 2023. The summer of 2023 will forever be remembered for Barbenheimer. While Oppenheimer was the overtly intellectual historical prestige film, Barbie more than held its own in the smarts department. A fiercely funny and feminist reading of the doll that everyone has an opinion on, Greta Gerwig's Barbie follows stereotypical Barbies, played by Margot Robbie's journey of self-discovery, which leads her away from Barbie land and into the real world. Ryan Gosling may have scored the Oscar nod for his performance as Ken, but the entire cast is worthy of recognition, and as far as satirical romps go, you won't get much better than this. Entertainment Weekly's critic writes, It's Gerwig's care and attention to detail that gives Barbie an actual point of view, elevating it beyond every other cynical IP-driven cash grab. Crossroads from 2002 is our number six. The film debut of Britney Spears is, as Entertainment Weekly's critic calls it, a girl dream road trip about three childhood best friends, Lucy, played by Spears, Kit, played by Zoe Saldana, and Mimi, played by Taryn Manning, who drive cross-country from Georgia to Los Angeles after digging up a wish box they buried as kids. As they cruise the open road in a classic convertible, the girls reconnect and embark on a coming-of-age journey, facing pregnancy, romance, absentee parents, and dive bar karaoke along the way. While life doesn't always go their way, the not girls, not yet women, learn they will always have each other. Dumplin' is from 2018. Frustrated by the judgment of her pageant-obsessed Texas town, as well as her former beauty queen mother, Rosie, played by Jennifer Aniston, Willow Dean, played by Danielle McDonald, aka Dumplin', decides to enroll in the Miss Teen Blue Bonnet contest as a protest in heels. Despite declaring she's not the Joan of Arc of plus-size girls, her actions do inspire a few other outsiders to join her Dolly Parton-scored revolution and shake things up. Like a pillow cross-stitched with sassy aphorisms, Entertainment Weekly's critics said, Dumplin' is kitschy and squishy and, if you let yourself, pretty sweet to sink into. Next, we have Eurovision Song Contest, The Song of Fire Saga from 2020. Icelandic musicians Lars, played by Will Ferrell, and Sigrid, played by Rachel McAdams, are lifelong friends and not yet sweethearts who dream of winning the Eurovision Song Contest. Despite disapproval from their parents, their town, and the local Eurovision Selection Committee, the duo dubbed Fire Saga refuses to let anything stop them from achieving their goal of songwriting immortality, including their romantic feelings for each other. Underneath all the spandex and over-the-top production numbers is a sincere film that cares as much about sharing the joy of music as satirizing its ostentatious performance. Klaus is from 2019. Klaus is a Santa Claus origin story that's enjoyable any time of the year. Starring Oscar winner J.K. Simmons as the film's eponymous hero, Klaus tells the story of a widowed Norwegian lumberman who is recruited by the town's new postman, Jesper, played by Jason Schwartzman, to make toys for him to deliver in an effort to prove his postmaster general father wrong. But when Klaus's toys begin to cheer up the children of Smirnsburg, a town whose inhabitants are perpetually engaged in a feud between two familial clans, Jesper and Klaus must step out of their comfort zones to help save the town from itself. Klaus isn't just another feel-good film, it's also a film that looks great. Employing unique technology to transform 2D animation into what looks like 3D, the film is well-deserving of its Academy Award nomination for Best Animated Feature, the first of Netflix's original animated features to receive that distinction. Mixtape is from 2021. This late 90s set young adult dramedy is the perfect choice for a sweet, nostalgic watch, complete with a sweeter, even more nostalgic soundtrack. Beverly, played by Gemma Brooke Allen, is an orphaned 12-year-old being raised by her grandmother, Gail, played by Julie Bowen. When Beverly finds a damaged mixtape left behind by her deceased parents, she enlists the help of a jaded record store owner, played by Nick Thune, and goes on a quest to reassemble the track list to gain insight into who they were. Coming-of-age movies are a dime a dozen, What sets mixtape apart is how it lives and breathes the experience of discovering music, obsessing over it, and even making some of your own. My Octopus Teacher is from 2020. My Octopus Teacher is an Oscar-winning documentary that chronicles South African freediver Craig Foster's bond with an octopus he discovers while on an underwater expedition. As he observes the creature's life, playfulness, and harrowing encounters with predators, he notices changes in his approach to his own life and relationships out of the water. Filled with gorgeous, entrancing cinematography, this true story of an unlikely friendship inspires wonder about the natural world and our place in it. Nimona is from 2023. Shape-shifting troublemaker Nimona, played by Chloe Grace Moretz, aspires to be the villainous sidekick to the Queen's would-be assassin Ballister Boldheart, played by Riz Ahmed, despite his protests that it was a frame-up. As the unlikely pair of outcasts team up, the kingdom's ancient history and modern politics throw unexpected wrinkles into their quest to clear Ballister's name. We expect animated family adventures like this to be uplifting and heartfelt, but Nimona ups the ante with its explorations of chosen families, queer identity, self-expression, and its complex but inspiring understanding of heroism. Rescued by Ruby is from 2022. Based on real events, this heartwarming tale of interspecies friendship stars Grant Gustin as Dan O'Neill, a state trooper who dreams of joining the canine unit. The only obstacle in his way is his lack of an actual canine. Enter Ruby, a rescue dog whose behavioral issues have kept her from finding a home outside of an animal shelter. Dan, who has dyslexia and ADHD, recognizes a kindred spirit, and the two set out to rescue each other. Rescued by Ruby is a treat for animal lovers, but also ideal for anyone who loves a good underdog story. Our number 14 of 15, To All the Boys I've Loved Before, from 2018. Laura Jean's, played by Lana Condor's, meddling little sister Kitty, played by Anna Cathcart, unleashes havoc on her life when she finds the teen's secret collection of love letters and mails them to her crushes, including to their older sister Margot's, that's Janelle Parrish's ex-boyfriend Josh, played by Israel Brassard. To do damage control, Laura and classmate Peter Kavinsky, played by Noah Centineo, agree to fake being in love to disguise her feelings from Josh and make Peter's ex jealous. Entertainment Weekly praises the film for having more substance than you'd expect, and Condor as Laura Jean has a winning, be-true-to-yourself sense of independence that's infectious. And number 15 of 15, Won't You Be My Neighbor? From 2018. Slip into a pair of comfy sneaks and a cozy cardigan, then push play on this uplifting documentary from director Morgan Neville about the life and career of Fred Rogers, host of the legendary PBS children's show Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, which ran from 1968 to 2001. As Entertainment Weekly's critic puts it, Neville hasn't made a flashy movie here. It's an intimate profile of a simple, and let's admit it, pretty square guy who beamed childlike innocence and everyday goodness into our living rooms for 40 years. Those have been the 15 best happy movies on Netflix that will inspire a smile. I'm happy just reading that list already. It was by Andrew Walsh and Alana Gordon. And let's wrap up this episode with some box office information from last weekend. Mickey 17 dethrones Captain America Brave New World, becomes unlikely box office hero at number one. This is by Shania Russell. there's a new hero in town, and his name is Mickey. It might not be the most heroic moniker, but there's no questioning who the champion of this weekend's box office is. Mickey 17, the sci-fi fantasy marking the first film from South Korean director Bong Joon-ho since 2019's Oscar-winning phenomenon Parasite, debuted with a solid start of $19.1 million in domestic markets per ComScore, dethroning Captain America Brave New World after its three-week streak at number one. The film picked up an additional $24.5 million globally after rolling out a week early in select markets, bringing its global tally to $53.3 million. It's an impressive start for the offbeat space adventure, which stars Robert Pattinson as Mickey, a disposable worker who is reprinted over and over again as different versions of him die while exploring dangerous space terrain. But the film has a long way to go before achieving profitability, as it reportedly cost $118 million to produce, not even accounting for the millions spent on marketing and promotion per AP News. Perhaps word of mouth will give the film the boost it needs, as so far it has been well received by critics and moviegoers and currently sits at 78% on Rotten Tomatoes. Adapted from Ashton Edwards' novel Mickey 7, the film also stars Mark Ruffalo, Naomi Ackie, Steven Yeun, and Toni Collette. Coming in at number two is the star-spangled man himself, Captain America. The Anthony Mackie-led Marvel film, picking up from where his spin-off show left off, sees Sam Wilson take on the mantle of Captain America. In his first solo outing with the Shield, Mackie has certainly found an audience. The film added an estimated $8.5 million to its domestic take this weekend, for a total of $176.5 million domestically. On a global scale, the film sits at $370.7 million, but compared to the franchise's top earners, Avengers Endgame capped off at a whopping $2.8 billion worldwide, Brave New World would need quite the boost to stand out among other MCU titles. A much more grounded kind of hero came in at third, Last Breath. The Woody Harrelson-led thriller added $4.2 million to its $14.6 million domestic tally. That's $15.1 million globally. The film tells the true story of deep-sea divers who battle the raging elements to save a crewmate trapped hundreds of feet below the ocean's surface. Based on a 2019 documentary, the film stars Harrelson, Simu Liu, Finn Cole, and Cliff Curtis. The Monkey earned an additional $3.9 million in domestic markets, bringing its tally to $31 million, that's $52.1 million globally. Based on the Stephen King short story of the same name, the film follows twin brothers whose fates become entwined with a mysterious wind-up monkey that can cause outrageous and borderline humorous deaths at random. 25 years after it tears their family apart, the monkey begins a new killing spree, forcing the estranged brothers to reunite and confront the cursed toy once and for all. Rounding out fifth is Paddington in Peru, the latest installment in the warm-hearted franchise about Britain's furry refugee. The kid-friendly tale earned another $3.8 million, bringing its domestic total to $36.9. The beloved bear also found further success abroad, adding $7.1 million to its now $175.8 million total. The film sees Paddington, played by Ben Whishaw, and his adoptive family, the Browns, trek to Peru after the titular bear discovers that his beloved aunt has gone missing from the home for retired bears. But the search for Aunt Lucy soon turns into a legendary treasure hunt in the rainforests of the Amazon. Other notable weekend openers include A24's on Becoming a Guinea Fowl, the surreal and emotional family drama that opened to $13,361 in four theaters, and In the Lost Lands, a fantasy tale based on an early George R.R. Martin penned short story that debuted to $1 million. The latter stars Mila Jovovich as a powerful and feared sorceress who is sent into the ghostly wilderness of the Lost Lands, where the laws of nature don't apply, to find a magical power to free her people from oppression. She is guided on her way by Boyce, played by Dave Bautista, a drifter who is one of the few able to navigate the Lost Lands. That was our box office information. Mickey 17 dethrones Captain America and becomes unlikely box office hero at number one. As I'm recording this, we haven't had a review yet for Mickey 17, and maybe by the next time I'm reading, we will have a review. So I'll use that as a teaser for our next episode. Please come back next week. We'll see if we have a review of Mickey 17, or we'll just have other interesting articles from Entertainment Weekly. This is Sun Sounds of Arizona. I've been reading from Entertainment Weekly's website, which is EW.com. I'm volunteer reader Diane Salisbury, and until next week, goodbye.